My oldest brother was a DJ. He used to have vinyl records, and so he'd throw parties and do events. Actually, on the cutting edge, my oldest brother Mundla, who's since passed, but he was kind of the inspiration for it all, I'd say, because he kind of brought us into this new world.
Growing up in Zimbabwe in the 1980s, Dumisani Ndlovu had a hard time accessing his favorite music genres, American hip hop and rap.
We heard commercial releases like Madonna or Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, but not a lot of hip hop per se.
But when Dumi and his brother did get their hands on a Run DMC record or an American hip hop magazine, it fueled their creativity for days.
Hip hop was in its Afrocentric phase in the late 80s, early 90s, and so made perfect sense for people in Africa and people like myself. I was like, hey, we're a part of this story too.
When Dumi was in high school, he decided to write a letter to The Source, an American hip hop magazine. And one of their writers, David Funkin Klein, responded.
There was a call out to international hip hop artists, send in your story and tell us what you're doing. And so we were like, hey, we're out here. And to our surprise, pleasant delight, Funkin' Klein, as he was known, wrote back and said, hey, that is so cool and so exciting. And lo and behold, he would say, if you ever come to the US, look me up. As unlikely as it seemed or would have been conceived at the time, and ended up with us signing a record deal with Hollywood Basic Records and my brother and I as a group called Zimbabwe Legit. My brother and I ended up having one of the first albums by a hip hop crew from Africa that gained international recognition. As with any other situation, things eventually turn and change. And so when the label owner that had signed us and found us passed away, we kind of were in a limbo transition state of trying to figure out, now what do we do next? But the one thing we kept in mind was, keep going. It's the analogy of the duck floating smoothly on the water with the legs underneath paddling furiously. And so that's what we aspire to do, is just continue working. And that was one of the messages, actually, the guy, Funkin' Klein, had told us. He was like, just keep at it. Don't stop. If you just keep working, good things will happen.
You're listening to Arts Work Life, a podcast from the Association of Performing Arts Professionals. I'm Claire Caulfield. For our season 4 finale, Paying It Forward. Almost all of us have had a mentor that helped shape our careers. Maybe it was a teacher, an older family member, or someone on the other side of the world. And when we look back on that relationship, we realize that nothing in our lives would be the same without their friendship, guidance, and advice. On today's episode, we explore creatives stepping into the role of mentor and how giving back to the next generation can sometimes be even more fulfilling than creating our own work. Act 1, Passing the Mic. We're returning to Dumisani Ndlovu's story for Act 1. Through the highs and lows of a career in the music industry, Dumi stayed grounded by teaching workshops on rap, hip-hop history, and emceeing. When he was living and working in Washington, D.C., he heard about a program that funded artistic workshops overseas.
So I was like, I have to do this. This sounds so amazing and so exciting. And I was blessed that I got to do a residency, close to a month-long residency, teaching hip-hop, teaching emceeing, specifically in Thailand. And one of the great things about it was coming in, they said, hey, we've reviewed your credentials and there's been many applicants and you've been selected. So we have faith in what you're going to do. So we're not going to tell you this is how you need to go and day one needs to be like this. And, it's the format and structure is up to you based on your experience and background. You're the expert. And so I really loved that. So going in, the best laid plans, as they say, I had them all written out in my notebook and sketched out and like, yeah, this really worked and I've done this before and I'm going to try to do this and, we'll go through some hip hop history. But as they say, expect the unexpected and always be prepared, right? And I think hip hop kind of uniquely prepares you for that. Like we all, at least as MCs, do a lot of freestyling where it's improv on the spot. And I teach that in my workshops. It's a lesson for hip hop, for music, for freestyling, but also a lesson for life, because we all know you had a plan, you did something, and then things changed. When I got to Thailand, oh yeah, things were a lot different on the ground than expected. And so a lot of the students in the class weren't necessarily fluent in English, and it's kind of challenging to kind of take colloquial speak and teach people songwriting and write a song together with different languages. So had to adapt. There was about, I want to say about 12 to 14 students in the MCing class, in the age from like, I think 16 to like 20, 21-ish age. Something that kind of helped us gel was kind of that hip hop tenet and principle of the cipher, which is where you come together in a circle and everybody kind of shares, right? And it's like, it's a tradition as old as time itself, as they say, but you go around and each person gets to speak and gets to share their point of view. And so that's empowering, I think, especially because if it's done in a supportive manner, right? If somebody tries, you know, we encourage them, we cheer, we celebrate. And so through that, we kind of just leverage that collaborative spirit, that community building spirit, that supportive spirit. So I asked the students, like, what they thought hip hop meant to them. What did it evoke in them? Like in one word, one of the first ones somebody said, they said power. And I thought that was just amazing because that's what I felt, right? And I felt, you know, that's the force that carried me as an aspiring rap artist one day that was in high school in Africa, writing a letter to be in Thailand, teaching a workshop. And so somebody said power. Somebody else said movement. Somebody else said expression. Somebody said dancing. And then somebody said speaking, which I thought was great, right? It's not just like making noise. It's actually speaking, which I equate to saying something meaningful and important. So we had power, movement, expression, dancing, speaking. Somebody said ability, which was really cool because it's like, yeah, it's skills, right? So of course we took those words. We had them up on the board. And I was like, well, this has to be part of a chorus or a hook. And that was like kind of the launching pad that I think propelled us forward. It was like rocket fuel. When I kind of emphasize, kind of look up, connect with the audience, move around, have fun with it, enjoy, and for the people with you, support the person. We'll all, you know, each person would have 10 hype men with them each time they'd perform because we'd all be jumping in. And it's like, yeah, if we know your words, we can emphasize and kind of build you up and just all that. Everything related to coming together and supporting each other, literally and figuratively. Next level, we connect the dots in Thailand. Keep it moving from your land to my land. We come together because no man's in our land. As long as we can get together, you know we can make it better. Youth, I tell kids, I tell everybody, like, tell people your story. Writing the letter to the magazine was telling somebody your story and sharing what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go and being open to possibilities and suggestions and recommendations. Let them know what you're trying to do. There's people out there that are in similar situations or connected with people that might be able to just get you to that destination faster.
Dumisani Nlovu is a performance artist and educator working in the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area. Act 2, Stepping Stones. As a self-described bunhead, Julie O'Peel had one goal growing up, become a professional ballerina. She spent countless hours training, earned a BFA in dance, and was hired as a trainee at Ballet Memphis.
I was performing and I was able to do these classical ballet works that I really loved. But something in my gut that was telling me there's maybe a little bit more that I want to be doing. And so I spoke to one of my mentors. And he was like, maybe you need to, you know, get out of Memphis and explore some new things. You know, I was from Memphis, Tennessee, and I was performing there. It's like, okay, yeah, maybe it's time for me to find something new and explore new horizons.
She made a plan and set up a number of auditions with other ballet companies around the country.
I had one more performance with the company. I did a sauté arabesque, which is a step I would do probably every day of my career. And for whatever reason, that day, as I took off, I landed on my right foot, rolled out, and heard a carrot snap. That was the sound, like crunch. It turned out I had broken my foot. I broke my cuboid. As injuries do, they kind of cause us they cause dancers to take a moment, reassess, like, what is the big plan? What is the universe telling me? Now I look at it as an offering, as a gift, but it offered me this moment to stop and reconsider everything.
Julie then reached out to another mentor who recommended she attend graduate school. And that's where she fell in love with teaching.
I got to teach absolute beginner ballet classes, which was such a joy because I was able to really see the development from the beginning to end for those dancers. You see the growth, and I was getting students, you know, giving me feedback like, okay, something that I'm doing here is helpful. It has inspired me and my leadership as well, like how I can mentor the next generation. Teaching these classes really opened my eyes that there are so many paths you can take to have dance in your life.
After graduation, Julie moved to Los Angeles, California. She saw a job listing at a dance company called Body Traffic. This company was really focused on the idea that dance is for everyone, and the job was highly focused on community outreach and education.
For me, it was probably the first time that I saw a job posting and I was like, I can do all of these things. I can build curricula that's impactful for both pre-professional dancers, but also for people who are new to dance or people who've never experienced dance before. So I was so excited to become a part of this company. We have a tagline in our company. It's like, without movement, nothing changes. And I love that so much because it's become kind of my personal ethos. It's like movement really does change the world. A lot of our programming, you know, includes things like leadership training, and we have mentor sessions with how to connect students who are feeling, you know, a sense of burnout or feeling a sense of real fear about the next step in their career. And for me, it's like all of those experiences I had that have led me to this point, I think have really primed me to be able to have really frank conversations with young people because I've been there. Like, it wasn't an easy path for me. And it does make me emotional because I can really put myself in their shoes. You know, in our summer program, we develop these real bonds with our students who come in from all over the country. And one kid, for instance, they were in college and they were in a more prestigious program that if they were getting advice from somewhere else, it's like, okay, stay the course in that program. That name on your diploma, you know, holds some weight to it. But the student was really unhappy in the city they were in. This particular student didn't come from a lot of resources. You know, they were on financial aid and they were in a city that was just really, really challenging to be in. And without giving too many specifics, but I was like, you know, I think you really have to look at like what your definition of success is. And if success to you is the prestige of a name of a college on your diploma, then maybe you want to fight through these feelings. But if success for you is like, you know, security, financial security, there are certain things that you might have to sacrifice. Maybe you're sacrificing the prestige of the school to choose a program that is more supportive for you. When I'm working with students, I try to look back at myself that time, like, what's the advice I wish I had gotten? You know? I feel like there is so much power in unpacking a linear idea of success. And like, for instance, like we go to elementary school and then we go to middle school and then we go to high school and there's always a next step for you. You just kind of take the step because it's there. And when I was injured, it's like the next step, like the next stepping stone just got removed. But now looking back, being forced to stop and choose another direction, it's made my life so much more colorful and colored my perspective of what dance can be and how I can create environments for young people where they can see all of the different paths that that they don't have to choose just the one thing and then get to a moment where everything crashes and they don't know what's next. There's so many directions they can take, and they're all beautiful and they're all valuable, and one is not better than the other. It's just different.
Julie O'Peel is the Director of Education and Community Engagement at Body Traffic in Los Angeles, California. Act 3, The Freedom to Lead. Alex Ketley is a performance artist, choreographer, and educator. When the pandemic started, he was teaching a dance class at a university in California, and the lockdown put him in a predicament. How would he make a dance film when his students were spread out all over the world? Even more importantly, how could his class stay connected in a time of such intense isolation? Alex decided to turn to someone who knows more about isolation than just about anyone else. Bill Clark, an inmate on death row. Here's Bill and Alex sharing their story of collaboration, friendship, and how one relationship can touch hundreds of lives.
I've been incarcerated for 34 years on death row.
But about 5 or 6 years ago, I met Alex through a pen pal website called writerprisoner.com. And because he lived so close to San Quentin, which is where I was housed at the time, he came to visit me. And one thing led to another, and we decided to create a collaborative piece.
I met Bill with no design or intention on becoming artistic collaborators. I was concerned about inmates during the height of the pandemic. And so I wrote Bill this letter. We became close friends. But the more I got to know Bill, it was clear that he was this very, very vibrant artistic spirit. The school had asked me to make a dance film with the students scattered all across the planet. You know, this sort of interesting process that was this remote process. So like I had separation from Bill. I had separation from all the performers because everybody was in quarantine. I had performers who were in Japan and China and the Middle East. And, you know, we were working entirely by Zoom where I would teach them movements and then they would go out somewhere and film that movement.
But it absolutely captured my experience. I was riveted by it. I was mesmerized by it, to be honest with you. I had never thought that something could be created with my words and my language and my story. So when I actually saw it, I was in shock, but in a good way.
I think there's something around when Bill is in a class, the students realize how consequential this interaction is. Bill, through his openness, really, I think, sets an example for a class of how to be in an artistic setting, that we're going to be open and vulnerable. And the fact that he's going out of his way to reach out from death row to work with students and mentor them and talk to them, I think just sets up a different type of environment and interaction. And the artwork feels like it just has to be deeper and more resonant because of that.
I teared up because of the authenticity of each person involved and the passion. When I was their age, I was nowhere near that open and honest about my personal life. In a classroom setting like that, I would have never done that. It just motivated me to be more open, more vulnerable, and more authentic with them. One day, Alex came to me and he said he wanted to produce a show, which is basically a portrait of my life. And I was so incredibly, incredibly moved by it.
I remember talking to Bill and I said, all these things that we've been working on are so important to me and kind of has changed me so dramatically. But I said, the thing that I really do is I love working on these evening length performance pieces. So it's not a piece about prison and it's not a piece about freedom. It's really a reflection of me and Bill's like deep friendship. And then the title, An Approximation of Resilience. Your listeners have never met anybody more resilient or more optimistic than Bill Clark. And so for me, making the work was really, I just felt like what I needed to do is amplify Bill's genius in the hopes that A, it changes people's perspectives on inmates generally, but also creates kind of momentum around people wanting to free Bill? Because in the end, that's the big part of this story. Your listeners might question, is Bill guilty or is he not guilty? We also have to question another thing is, should we incarcerate people for 40 to 50 to 60 to 70? You know, I don't think as a society we should do that.
Not being able to attend the rehearsals was probably the lowest point for me. I mean, I wanted to be there, and I actually would have loved to have danced myself. Even though I'm not a dancer, obviously, I'm not a professional dancer, but I think it would have been riveting for people to see me dance. And the fact that I couldn't dance, I couldn't be a part of the show itself, and I couldn't be there while the piece was being created during the rehearsal process. Because every now and then I would call in on the video on the tablet and watch the rehearsal, which was great, but I would have loved to have been at every single rehearsal. Working with Alex has been probably the greatest turning point of my life. It has changed my life. He has single-handedly changed my life. You know, you're sitting in a prison cell and you're on death row in your wildest dreams. You never imagined a show in New York that's based on your life and your story. So that was an extremely high point.
Having a deep friendship with somebody that absolutely changes your life almost in every way, then of course interlaces with my life as an art maker. I mean, on a practical level, I've been to a prison almost every week for 5 years. You know, Bill has always been a deep inspiration to me, how he has absolutely transcended his experience. He talks about often, you know, the state has incarcerated his body, but his spirit is free and always will be free. And that kind of vantage point is really incredibly life-changing to think about in our own lives.
Because of Alex and our collaborative work, I don't dwell on a lot of the negativity of prison life and the mundane aspects of it. He has basically and virtually eliminated all of that from my life because of his presence. When you're 71 years old and incarcerated, there's not a lot of incentive to rise, I'll say, because I'm surrounded by a lot of guys. They don't have the support system I have, and they don't have the incentive that I have to get up every morning. And I cannot thank him enough.
Everything that Bill has gotten, I have gotten just equally. Bill has become a surrogate parent when I don't have parents, a grandparent to my daughter. It's funny because we've had quite a serious interview, and Bill and I joke around a lot. So I was about to just say something funny.
Say something funny. And I'm tearing up too, look, because of you. And I love him for that. Yeah.
The two are now preparing for another semester of teaching together. But instead of working with college students, Alex and Bill are branching out to a new community.
Bill was talking to some of our allies in the prison system, and they basically said, you know, do you think Alex would ever come teach a class here? And I said, oh my God, absolutely. That would be absolutely fantastic.
I'm excited about it. I can't wait. I'm anxious. Some of the inmates that I've spoken to already are excited about it. They can't wait. They know they'll be creating performance pieces, and they all look forward to it. I think in this version, iteration of the class, I think it shouldn't be about me at all. It should be more about the inmates sharing their stories, because we all have a story. And I think the goal should be to highlight their stories and their experiences, and not so much focus on me and mine.
Having an opportunity to work intimately with inmates to get their stories and their voices and their ideas out in the world is really compelling to me. With this, I'm hoping I can bring new kind of ideas and concepts that the inmates might not have had exposure to, from contemporary artwork. And the way that we're envisioning the class is that it's not really just a class in creating dance or choreography. They can make films, they can write plays, it's really open to any medium that you're drawn to.
This fall, roughly 800 inmates at Vacaville Prison will have the opportunity to enroll in Alex and Bill's course, which has Bill reflecting back on their very first collaboration.
When Alex first told me that he and I were going to teach a class, I don't think I've ever told him this. I thought he had lost his mind. I said to myself, this guy, though I love him, is delusional. So when he sent me the email from the department chairman approving it and actually saying, I can't wait to come to some of the classes, I was so shocked. I had to look at it and read it like 50 times. And I'm like, this can't be true. This can't be real. And I don't think in the history of the world has a death row inmate ever taught a class at any university. I still can't believe that happened. I've maintained friendships with a lot of the students that I've co-taught. A lot of them are still in my life. They come to visit me. They share their life experiences with me, their struggles, their triumphs. I get all of that. I try my best to be an empathetic listener. I don't judge. I don't criticize. I just listen. And so with the class that Alex and I will be ultimately teaching here at Vacaville, I know a lot of the inmates struggle with emotional, psychological, and social problems and social issues. I'll try my best to assist them in getting through those experiences and overcoming those experiences to live better lives and be better people. It all seems very dreamlike to me to bring generosity and share generosity and compassion with a new generation of people is an absolute dream of mine. It's a dream come true for me.
Alex Ketley and Bill Clark are performance artists and educators collaborating in Vacaville, California. Thank you so much for listening and for help making season 4 a huge success. Arts, Work, Life is a production from APAP, the Association of Performing Arts Professionals. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the storytellers and not necessarily those of APAP. APAP is a national service organization for the performing arts presenting, booking, and touring industry. You can join APAP at apap365.org. The podcast team includes Grace Asuncion and Sam Myers, all led by our executive producer, Jenny Thomas, who I cannot thank enough for her support through the season. And I'm Claire Caulfield, your host and producer. Our music today is from Blue Dot Sessions and Dumi Sani in Lovu. This podcast would not be possible without the generous support of the Wallace Foundation, so thank you. Other thank yous to the APAP staff and board of directors, our storytellers today, and the hundreds of thousands of arts workers across the world. Your stories matter, and arts workers are essential. I really hope you enjoyed all the stories this season, and it would mean so much to me and the entire podcast team if you could share the episodes with a friend or leave us a review, as it helps other people find the show.
Arts, Work, Life. That's real.